Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
A September to remember it was on Wednesday night at Canada Life Place.
Mm-hmm. You ever been?
No, I do not. No, I don't think I have been. Been to London, never to Canada Life Place.
I don't think so.
My recollection.
Yeah.
It's listen, there were like 3,400 people though. Very, very enthusiastic crowd. I would say kind of up until the end portion when I think everyone kind of felt the three hours.
Yeah. And like in modern wrestling times, maybe like a 3 hour show doesn't feel that long, but with like a style of show as dense as an AEW Dynamite/Collision, yeah, you could certainly start feeling it by the third hour, especially if your main eventers aren't necessarily the biggest match on the show. But I'll say I was definitely happy to see AEW back in an arena setting with the full stage and with more than, 1,000 people there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, for three quarters of this show, I thought this crowd was just tremendous. Like they were like Tony Khan was going nuts about this crowd online, says we're going to come back here every year. They were and it sounded great for a good portion of the show. Before we get to the recap, just want to put on everyone's notice that we are going to be back with the latest Rewind Away on Thursday, covering the Survivor Series from 30 years ago. Diesel versus Bret Hart for the WWF Championship, their big rubber match in the nation's capital, Landover, as Diesel, 1 year into his title reign against Bret Hart. And this will be our big review coming up on Thursday. We've also got the wild card match. We have Bam Bam Bigelow against Goldust. We have, the Royals against the Dark Side. I mean, look at this. BSK versus the tooth puller, the worst king of the ring ever, Triple H in his Greenwich getup, and Jerry Lawler. I mean, what a foursome.
It really was. I mean, I don't know what people say when they say the mid-90s were lean years for the WWE. I think this is an all-star team.
It really was. And then, of course, the main event, the women's four-on-four match, as we get Alundra Blaze with Kyoko Inoue and company against Bertha Faye's foursome, which includes Aja Kong and Mr. Perfect and Vince McMahon reacting to like the most violent, brutal wrestling they've ever seen. And Mr. Perfect proving that he would probably be canceled by wrestling Twitter if he was calling women's matches in 2025.
I don't think Mr. Perfect would have a show on ABC late night. If
I think the FCC would step in, and that would be a step too far. I mean, yes.
Or maybe they'd dedicate a whole channel to him. Who knows?
Yeah, it would really depend. I mean, yeah. Different standards for different people, it looks like. So that's coming up on Thursday, and then we'll have a rewind of SmackDown on Friday night here for all members of the Post Wrestling Cafe, and then we dive into the weekend. Will we survive? We don't know, but it's all going to start at Gabby's on King Street West. Where else could this weekend begin? 11:30 a.m. Why so early? Blame these wrestling companies. 11:30 a.m. We will be at Gabby's, 309 King West. No cover to get in. All you have to do is show up and say the magic word, the Bray D, or Tanahashi's asshole. That's going to be the code word to give to Braden, and he'll let you in. Okay.
No context needed. Just say it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he'll tell you the context. We're going to be doing wrestling themed music, drink specials. Davey has concocted some breakfast shot that I will not be partaking in, but I will certainly watch as others do. Prizes and all of the details can be found poisonrana.ca. It's all oot, as you can be oot in a boot in downtown Toronto.
You know, I mean, it's... I don't judge, certainly, especially on a Saturday, but come on, if you're afraid of judgment, and if you're looking for just some excuse to be drunk at 11:30 a.m., well, Braden, Davey, and John Pollock are going to provide that for you. This is a great excuse to get drunk.
Well, I got to watch these two. They're allegedly going to the press conference afterwards, so I don't know how they're going to make but we'll see. They're pros.
They'll have like 7 hours between this and the press conference.
Braden doesn't know what continent he's on right now. Okay. He's jet lagged
for sure. Yeah.
All right. So that should be a lot of fun on Saturday. And then Way and I are going to be back sometime on Sunday. Look out for our notice of what time we will go live, but we are going to have a review of All Out and WrestlePalooza on Sunday. So we will time to be determined. I'm going to hope to get both those shows watched on Saturday, and then we can record at some point on Sunday, but it'll revolve around our schedule. So Sunday we will speak with you and we'll go through both shows. Lots of fun coming up this weekend at postwrestling.com. And also I will give a heads up to today's Pollock and Thurston. We had a big show, 90 minutes worth. We were joined by Robert Jackman, who is a previous guest that we have had on in the past to talk about the WWE Saudi Arabia connection. He has actually covered shows of WWE's in Saudi Arabia, so has had that perspective. And so we talked with him about WrestleMania going over there and some of the logistics as well attached to it as they look ahead to 2027. And we also talked about a report that Brandon and I put out today about the potential of any independent groups going to Saudi Arabia. We spoke with Mike Bocchicchio at High Spots and Brett Lauderdale from GCW. And the main takeaway was that Brett Lauderdale had told us that there has been reach out from groups in Saudi Arabia to bring them to the Middle East. Will this happen? We will find out. Effie has since posted to X, he will not be going to Saudi Arabia. So that was the update there.
Is that right?
On behalf of Effie. Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, you're reading some of Lauderdale's tweets in response to the story, of course. And
well, there were quite a lot of responses to this story when we
let me just
today.
Read this. Okay. Brett Lauderdale says, the Saudis are making a big push for reckless youth. Don Montoya, Lobo, Ian Rotten, and Trent Acid. Had to give him the bad news about Trent Acid, Yokozuna style.
So, well, Brett Lauderdale is going to use this for, anyway.
This is perfect for them. But, I mean, could I see the collective actually doing something in Saudi? Man, I don't know, dude. It's a year and a half is a long time for things to change and...
Like, you would absolutely need, like, a sponsor over there that was going to underwrite a ton of the cost, because the logistics of it and the cost of it is insane. That's pretty much, like, what High Spots was conveying. Like, just the cost of it is just so crazy significant that it's just, like, would that even be worth your while to get over there?
So, I guess I'm more so even thinking about it from more of, a PR perspective for a brand like GCW that I feel is so counter to, you know, all of this, right? But they're also a small business that really relies on that particular weekend. I just don't even know what the demand for a collective type of, you know, series of events.
Who knows? Like, it's like, think of it about it that, like, it was interesting to talk to Robert today. The idea, like, a lot of these Saudi Arabia shows, like, the tickets are very cheap. And it's not so much the idea of, it's like the opposite over here of, can they find enough people that are going to fill a stadium for the show? And, like, we have heard the crowds, like, over the years. And they've gotten, like, these sound like super fans that are now attending these shows. Like, these are real WWE fans. And it would there, like, maybe there's this, like, huge appetite that just this novelty wrestling comes over. And there would there, like, if you booked a 3,000 seat arena, would there just be a ton of interest? But again, I don't think you could probably charge all that much. Like, I wouldn't be leaning on this as likely, but I mean, it's crazier things happen. But it would just seem to be like, this is.
We just saw CM Punk apologize to Saudi Arabia. That to me is, you know, one of the if that can happen, I mean, I can see anything happening.
Well, we will follow this. Okay, into September to Remember, our 3-hour special that AEW presented on Wednesday. WrestleTix announcing 3,338 as the final ticket distribution number. And we're starting off with a good old contract signing with Hangman Page and Kyle Fletcher. Don Callis states that Page. He has remembered this ever since Page beat your weakling friend, referring to Kenny Omega. He's wanted to take the title back. I found someone better than Kenny, better than you. There is no one in this business like Kyle Fletcher. Page explains he wants Kyle to do this on his own because I see your potential at 26. You could be here for decades and the whole roster could look to you to carry this company. But to do so, you're going to have to earn it alone. And if Don Callis or any Don Callis family member interferes on Saturday, not only will you lose by DQ, you will be stripped of the TNT title. And this is written into the contract. Fletcher explains, I would crawl through glass for this contract. I am scared of nothing. I'm the best pro wrestler to ever enter AEW, and I will fulfill my destiny. I'm better than you were in 2019 when you challenged for this. I'm better than you when you won it in 2021, and I'm better than you right now. AEW doesn't need you anymore, Hangman. And they sign the contracts, and Page explains how you're going to feel this loss the day after. You're going to be crushed, and what you do with that feeling is what will define you. So don't disappoint me in the years to come. And Kyle's final promise is that not only am I a man of my word about keeping the Don Callis family out and winning this title, but tonight you will be left beaten and bloodied and unable to walk out on your own 2 feet. And two of those three were accomplished by the end of the night.
Yeah, missing the blood, unfortunately. But two out of three ain't bad, especially you know, with these two on the go-home show. Kyle Fletcher was really great here.
I thought they were both great, but yeah. I thought this really elevated Kyle Fletcher that at the end of this segment, like this felt like a main event for the show. And I'm sure for some, the jury is out on where they see this as a big title match for a pay-per-view. But I think in the short time they've had, and since this time, we've also learned that like this apparently was Wardlow's spot, like this being a plan
which
B.
Which I find really hard to believe. Like,
I mean, they were doing the deal about... you know, which Don Callis family member is it going to be? I think Wardlow would have been a much tougher one than this going in.
I think when we're talking about Don Callis family members, Wardlow to me would be like near the bottom of the pack in terms of just who would be hot enough. Not to say he can't get there eventually, but that would take some time. That would take some strong programs for Wardlow in order to get to that pay-per-view headlining spot.
It's tough, right? Like, he injured himself on his return. Like, what did they have in store? Like, were they just...
What could they have done in a month to get Wardlow ready for a pay-per-view headlining title match against Hangman Page?
I'm not saying it would have been easy, but, I mean, I don't look at this as, you know... I think overall, I think they've done a really good job with this, and I thought this was a great segment to set up Saturday, and I think this has every possibility of being the match of the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, we know that in ring, it's going to be a tremendous match, but I thought this program really needed a segment like this one to really kind of elevate it, to make it feel like a more justified, spotlighted, you know, main event of this show, if it is going to be the main event, which I really think it should be because Hangman already missed out on one main event last time. But, you know, as always, this is going to be seen as a... as another test for Kyle Fletcher, who has aced every single one of them thus far, and how well is he going to do in this sort of setting, not just in the match itself, but in these sort of segments, these contract signings? What does he feel like a major star? And I thought the answer was yes. You know, having him no sell the stipulation shows a level of confidence. He looks the part. He was serious enough and intense enough, I thought, certainly in the post-match, post-show-ending angle here, that that you can certainly take him in that sort of role, whether or not he wins. Do you think we are actually getting a clean match?
I'll say yes.
Yeah, I guess I still have my doubts, you know? Like, there are ways around this. Like, if the referee doesn't see it, does the stipulation still apply? You know, but essentially this, they are promising a clean match for the pay-per-view, which I hope that they deliver on.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Way answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
There was a video for Darby Allin and Jon Moxley. More to come with Darby on the show. And we start with Jon Moxley and Roderick Strong with Marina Shafir and Daniel Garcia in one corner and Kyle O'Reilly in the other. And, of course, this is week two of Bryan Danielson on commentary. At one point, he did bring up wrestling 56 minutes with Roderick Strong, a matchway that you were live for.
I was?
Yes.
Chicago? Chicago Ridge?
Yeah, the Frontier
minutes?
Fieldhouse. Yeah, this was Super Card of Honor. This is the same card as Blood Generation and Doofixer.
Okay.
And they closed the show with this 56-minute match.
I forgot the rest of that card.
We were there a long time that day. I think we got to the building around 11 a.m. or so, and we were there. This match went till, I want to say, like, till 1.
Yeah, if you think these AEW shows, these AEW pay-per-views are long, all right, you have not been to a Gabe Sapolsky booked Ring of Honor show in the mid 2000s. I mean, but that was like a legendary show, wasn't it? You know,
it was. And it was only night one, because night two was Danielson Lance Storm.
Yep, and Homicide Cabana.
Yes, with fans throwing the chairs into the ring.
Yes,
and some brutally missing and taking out some fans from behind. So Strong goes after Moxley, and Marina Shafir stands in his way. And this was the best spot of this match. And Taz suggests maybe Roderick is infatuated by Marina.
So, I mean, they essentially could have had this interaction on Saturday when it was Paragon versus the Death Riders. And they didn't. And they didn't even make any sort of allusions to, like, whatever connection there is. And I'm trying to rack my brain thinking, okay, has it ever been established in AEW continuity that these two are married and that they have some sort of, like, connection to each other? I can't think of that, an example.
I'm sure it's been referenced in commentary, especially when Marina was doing dark matches and stuff like that. But
This is a different Marina Shafir, okay? One that doesn't speak English anymore. She's just forgotten. She only shares the same name. But this is a completely different person.
In fairness, if she saw the graphics for this match in advance and the AI version of Roderick Strong, she might have been focused on that image so long that she did not recognize her husband in the flesh.
Well, listen, unfortunately, AI...
the AI was not strong.
Yeah, it's just sort of a, you know, ubiquitous these days. What's up with Roderick Strong's eyes? You're absolutely right in this graphic. Huh.
Yeah. I mean, Jon Moxley is not looking too human either. I mean... He's almost looking like, you know, the guy from the Goonies here.
I like the way they did this with Shafir and Strong, though. Like, I mean, the reference is there enough for people that recognize it. And if you don't, just
I thought it was a fun spot. I thought it was funny. So Strong ends up getting his hand stomped, and Moxley is manipulating the fingers. Hits a pile driver, goes to the arm bar, but Strong comes back with a sick kick and a series of Olympic slams. Moxley then goes to the bulldog choke, and it's Strong to the rope. So Moxley starts biting his hand. The paradigm shift gets stopped, and then Strong tackles Moxley through the ropes when Garcia and Kyle start fighting on the floor. And then Yuta shows up, tripping Roderick from the floor, and this sets up a paradigm shift and the bulldog as Roderick goes out at 12 minutes, 48 seconds, and then... in my second favorite spot, Moxley rolls to the floor and he does some push-ups right afterwards in London, Ontario. A very obvious tribute.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Oh, very obvious. Yeah.
Come on.
Sure, I'm sure Moxley was watching his other TKO tapes way back.
Yeah.
I watching his UCC tapes.
We're going to get... Mark Hominick and Sam Stout here as part of the Canadian chapter of the Death Riders.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Really excellent match here. I thought, you know, really, John Moxley has been so incredibly consistent and very active over this summer. I mean, the man is, it feels like he's wrestling almost every single week.
Yeah.
And lately doing doubles, both Collision and Dynamite, you know, working this Daniel Garcia storyline. And every one of these matches is great. So, I think he's needed now more than ever, just given like this sort of weakened roster. But I mean, he's still the top villain for a good reason. He showed very good chemistry here with Strong, who delivered very hard hitting strikes, great looking offense, good selling. I thought Brian really shined in certainly this sort of match. Number one, he's got great technical insight. And number two, of course, having great sort of like kayfabe anecdotes of training with Moxley.
I thought he was so much more comfortable this week than he was last week. I think he got into a lot of just the rhythm and sharing a lot of different anecdotes, which are like, you can't force those things. They have to come naturally in the in just the natural play of a match. And I thought, especially the fact that we got him during the commercial break too, where, you know, he kind of was a bit more lighthearted with Taz and Excalibur during those breaks. You got to see him. He just felt a lot more at ease this week than last week.
Are you sad we're not getting like as much goofy Taz Tony interaction now? You know, it's like,
no,
it's not. Yeah. I don't really miss it that much either. It's not as like off the wall. But instead it's like, it's Brian almost like, I think getting comfortable doing commentary in those commercial break moments where he could just improvise and have these sort of like interesting conversations.
Yeah. I'm curious how much he's used on the pay-per-view on Saturday. They usually just have the whole rotation of different guys going in, but I'm sure he'll be at least featured on a significant portion. MJF walks into Tony Khan's office, the power that be, and he wants out of the tables and tax match and explains, I'm not some deathmatch wrestler. And Tony Khan, who's not on camera, yells, you violated the rules and the integrity of the sport. And MJF is not getting out of this match, so he is threatening to put another Briscoe in the dirt.
Man. Tough line. I mean, definitely like on the border of like what would be like cool, but for MJF it feels really perfect, and doing it all off camera behind closed doors, I thought had a really nice effect here. Good stuff from them.
Yeah. And then the match, I've got to say, I was the most intrigued by. I didn't know what this was going to be. This could be a disaster, this could be a pleasant surprise. Toa Leona against Bobby Lashley, and man, the Hurt Syndicate was so popular. They came out, this whole place is chanting for MVP, and then the match begins. Maybe they were trying to chant MPVD for their carrier service. never mind.
What is the acronym?
MPVD.
Okay, yes. It doesn't matter. I don't care. Just, it's... You will get ESPN.
MVPD. I better get. I will get corrected on that very quickly. Multi-channel video programming distributor.
Right. That'll only make sense if you listen to the XL edition. Yeah.
Oh, I always forget about these things. I'm playing to the whole audience. Okay.
Sure.
I'm not. Okay.
Yeah.
So they're chanting for Comcast, and then Lashley, they're all behind him. Lashley takes a Samoan drop on the edge. Danielson notes that I haven't seen Lashley compromised like that during his entire AEW run, which is like, is this the most significant bump Lashley has taken? It might be. And then
truth be told, I mean, we haven't really seen Lashley work as a babyface very much throughout this entire run. And obviously, being a babyface, you have to have a bit more selling for these sort of heat moments, right?
Well, he then gives us a stat that blew my mind, that Toa has not had a singles match since January, which is a long time, of 2024.
Oh, wow. That's pretty significant. Yeah.
I guess, like,
he's in a tag team.
Yeah, I guess so. So then Lashley hits an electric chair and a belly to belly, and it's just these two big men throwing each other around, and Toa is just meeting Lashley, and it's just a really fun big monster meat match. Lashley goes for the spear. Toa rolls out, so Lashley does the Braun Breaker, running around the corner and spears him on the floor. MVP just drills Ricochet with this punch, and they go insane for this. Then it's Shelton super kicking Khan on the floor. Toa hits a pounce, and then it's Lashley applying the Hurt Lock, and Toa tries to kick off the turnbuckle, but Lashley holds on, and Toa goes out in 10 minutes and 12 seconds as Khan and Ricochet fight MVP and Shelton Benjamin afterwards. I've got to say, I was pretty captivated by this. I thought that, like, it was just like these two monster trucks going at one another for 10 minutes. And I thought Toa had a very good accounting of himself in his first singles match in more than 18 months.
Mm-hmm. I think Toa should get a lot of credit for getting himself into really great shape. You know, like, you look at him from maybe even a year, certainly a year ago to now, he has, like, slimmed down massively. And that always, like, seeing those transformations take place in front of our eyes is always something really impressive to see. So I thought he did well here, you know, not necessarily, like, so well to the level where I'd want him to be a single star. I think he's certainly much stronger in this tag team right now. But I thought he did well. Yes, certainly.
They had that awesome brawl last week, and then this. Like, I'm interested in this trios match. Like, for an undercard trios match, like, I think they've done a good job of not just making this feel like some undercard throwaway.
I think they could have done a better job with Ricochet and the Gates of Agony here. Like, so we're now seeing the Hurt Syndicate being pushed as very straightforward baby faces, and of course it's working because the crowd wants to cheer them anyway. But I thought in this particular segment on the Go Home Show, I thought Ricochet and Gates of Agony just needed a little bit more credibility building here, because they already feel like heavy underdogs going up against the Hurt Syndicate. And the Hurt Syndicate Lashley tapped out this monster in Toa Leona. Okay?
They've won every segment going into
this
match.
They run them out of the ring and out of the arena. And MVP.
Wait, have I introduced you to the Hurt Syndicate? Okay, this is kind of how this works.
So this is a thing. Like, but the thing that I thought was the most egregious was that you had the manager here, the part-time, like, guy who's only wrestled like 2-3 matches in AEW in MVP, lay out the leader of the group in Ricochet. Yes,
see, I might
game.
Feel differently about this Saturday, but I think Ricochet is going to pin MVP. I think MVP is in this match to take the fall. And if I am incorrect, then maybe I'm going to have a different view of all of this at the end of it.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that justifies this sort of thing. But I mean, I feel like, so they're pushing like
MVP pins Ricochet. Maybe that's,
I mean, I think that could certainly
with
happen.
A 6:30,
dude. I just, like, my interest going into the match, though, does really feel like it's just, like, it's three dominant faces going over, or at least, like, about to meet a weaker-looking trios team. But, yeah, sure. Like, hopefully the match has them be a bit more equal.
Maybe they destroy the Gates of Agony and Ricochet, and then they get on the mic. They say, Bro Dito, those are our tag belts.
It's coming. It has to, right? No,
I don't know. I think they're
just going to stay away from these tag titles, despite being incredibly dominant.
Maybe they just approach. They enter the ladder match and they take everything.
All right.
We have our another face-to-face. A lot of those in wrestling this week. Copeland and Christian come out first. The crowd goes wild singing Copeland's theme, and then FTR are surrounded by London's finest, as they have all the security out. But they have been warned that there will be heavy fines for any physicality. Stokely explains it's $100,000 if they hit either Cash or Dax, and $500,000 if they touch Stokely. So on top of that, he says, if you strike us, the match will be canceled, and you will disappoint your family and friends by not competing.
Were those the exact words without any other extra sort of qualifier?
That's what Stokely said. He said the fine and the match would be canceled.
Then I guess we're out of match for the pay-per-view then.
I think we might have to only move forward with 12 matches instead of 13, potentially.
Okay.
So Cash mentions his whole history with Copeland being found at a gym and being brought in, and said, now we are the best tag team of all time. We've become living legends. We helped Copeland get his career back, and we thought you were coming to AEW to help us. Instead, it became the Adam Copeland show, and you took the spotlight. Dax says that Christian and Copeland were the best team at one time, but your competition was two mediocre teams that carried you to relevancy, available on pay-per-view next month. And then FTR are the generational team who had classics with Enzo and Big Bill, Gable and Jordan, DIY, the Bucks, Bullet Club Gold, the Outrunners, and our trilogy with the Briscoes. And Copeland tells him to shut up and remind Stoke that even with $500,000, you'd still get no hose. And I opened my home to you. I came to AEW to work with you guys, but the fans didn't want you in the spotlight, and said, you're in the discussion now of being one of the best teams. We've been here for 25 years. We created a match that became a pay-per-view, and there's only one, Cope and Cage. To which Cage clarifies Cage and Cope. So Cage then explains that for $500,000, that amount means nothing because I'm rich. And with that, he has the microphone and he drills Dax in the face with this microphone. I'm pretty sure he broke this man's nose because this thing, it looked like this machine was shattered. All of them hit their finishers, Shatter Machine, Kill Switch, Spear, all to the security guards. As Dax rolls to the floor with Cash, and his nose, like, it just looks destroyed from this shot. Maybe this match is going to get canceled. But that was the segment. So, I mean, they made no mention of this line by Stokely about the match being canceled. Which
Ryan in chat says Stokely said he would make sure it would be canceled, which I guess isn't
how's that
definitive.
Different than,
well, because it's not written into any sort of legally binding thing. He's threatening to get it canceled is what he
okay well
say.
We went off the air with no follow-up to this, so why was that line in there?
It shouldn't have been. It would only confuse something.
Okay,
but whatever, maybe they'll follow it up. I don't
when?
Know if it makes sense.
There's no show.
On the go-home show. Or on the
this was whatever. The go-home show.
No, sorry. Tailgate.
The tailgate? Okay.
Yeah. Online, anyway. Dude. Like, whatever.
You right. Know? They'll send a tweet. Sorry.
Yeah. I thought it was a good segment overall. You know, good set of promos here. That
not a great segment for Dax.
Oh, God, no. Yeah. But
his nose looked terrible.
I thought the role of the segment was to largely recap the story that FTR and Cope had already set up prior to the turn or after the turn. And it was fine. You know, it was well done. Certainly, like, this bloody nose probably added a good level of brutality to it that mm-hmm. I'm sure helped. But, like, it might be in the main events, or it might be in the poster. It might be the most advertised match. It doesn't feel like it's the main event for me.
Yeah, I think there'd be more of a debate if this was for the tag titles. But it's not. I'd be very surprised if anything but Hangman and Fletcher closes this show. I mean, really, this would be the only other option if you were putting something else in that position. But
yeah,
I don't see it.
But man, you know, Paige and Fletcher is going to be like, this is going to be a great match. Like, I have no doubt.
I agree.
Any FTR matches and, like, Cope and Christian, I'm very excited to see them tag. And those guys are, I'm sure they'll have something really really, really strong. But I think there's a level of higher anticipation for like Paige and Fletcher, at least to me.
Are we going to get the tag match where we're going to get the tribute spots of every tag team that Christian and Copeland have worked with that
yes,
we're going to incorporate into
including
this?
The two mediocre tag teams. Yes, for sure.
Oh God, is Copeland going to do Cena spots? Or big dog spots?
That's
the big dog, right. Adam Copeland.
To the big dog, yeah.
Yeah.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Renee is backstage. She approaches the Young Bucks who have, they're living off their $500,000 they made last week, and they're back in suits. They are paying off production for a better entrance tonight, and they just hand off $10,000 to Renee, who gladly takes it, and it's $10,000 US, not Canadian.
That's like $15,000.
Yeah. Brian Danielson, he just got in this line about how fast $500,000 can go in 2025. Basically saying this isn't all that much money to begin with, which it really wasn't. We literally went from back-to-back segments where Christian just laughed off $500,000 to this being life-changing money for Matt and Nick between them.
Right.
Well, like it's the exact same figure that we're talking about here.
I mean, Christian is so rich that he can afford this, whereas Matt and Nick are going from, I'm assuming...
He banked all that WWE backstage money.
That's it, yeah. Well, Christian, you think that was that lucrative? Then Renee shouldn't be complaining. Shouldn't be looking at this as that much money. She would have made the same money.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it wasn't enough the Punk wanted to retire off of.
Yeah, the forgotten run of Christian Cage on WWE backstage. Yes.
Yeah, they're at one point they were all there in AEW, like the whole cast.
Joe too.
Yeah, Joe too, and Punk and Paige. They were all there. Young Bucks against Juice Robinson and Austin Gunn. So we go through the picture-in-picture, builds up to Austin tagging in Juice, and then Nick and Matt, they just took this match to another level. Matt hits his tornado to the floor, sunset flip to his brother, sending Juice flying with a released German, so the crowd is going wild. BTE trigger misses as Juice ducks, and then Austin is taken out with a super kick party. Juice fires back with strikes, goes for the left hand of God, but is stopped. And then Austin catches Nick in midair as he's going for the Indy Taker with a mid-air flatliner. Juice manages a blade runner, and like they did the impossible here of getting this crowd to bite on Austin Gunn and Juice Robinson beating the Young Bucks, which was about the most clear-cut win that was going to be occurring of these three tag matches. Austin is sent out of the ring and Juice falls to a Meltzer driver in 11:39 as they also did a spot where they tried to pay off Rick Knox and he sent the bills flying. So after the match, Matt is just scrounging for all the bills. It feels like Nick is the fast and loose one with the money and Matt is preparing for life after wrestling with every last dollar saved as Nick goes gambling.
He's a slightly more responsible older brother.
He is, yeah. The wiser of the two. I thought this turned into a really entertaining match. I thought that one of Juice's best showings since he's come back from injury. So I did get into this.
Yeah, I find it to be a great classic Bucks style tag team match. And I thought Austin and Juice did a great job playing their part. You know, very elaborate, quick paced sequences, all nailed perfectly, which I really find perfect for a TV match. I mean, unlike some of their other matches, I mean, clearly when they're rich, they even wrestle better because things really went perfectly for the Bucks here. So I'm interested in the storyline. I mean, as we kind of predicted, it's just going to, you know, further the tragedy and somehow they'll probably be in even more debt than they were before.
There's a promo spot for all the women involved in the 4-on-4 women's tag on the tailgate brawl. Harley Cameron proclaims, "We're not just bringing the pain, we're bringing the propane." That could be a really dangerous spot if you like blew up a propane tank.
Well, will we see fire at the tailgate brawl?
Why not?
You'll have a barbecue, I suppose. Well, does this promise to be an out-of-arena match? Not necessarily, right?
Not necessarily, but it could be. Yeah. I think you'll do your wild kind of hardcore match here. Beast Mortos against Máscara Dorada. Winner faces Okada and Takeshita. Winner takes the fall on Saturday. Man, this was quite the performance here for Máscara Dorada. And working here with Beast Mortos was a great opponent for him. This was not a 100% hit rate for Máscara Dorada. But the audience loved this.
Not 95%, I feel.
It was a very high amount that he hit at. Mortos tears at the mask, and the Dorada does this flip off the shoulders and then the around the world head scissors. He gets hoisted on the edge into a destroyer onto the edge of the apron. That's Dorada's first destroyer. No petition going on here for this destroyer. Danielson is just, he loves Máscara Dorada, and he also loves Beast Mortos. There's a pop-up by Mortos into a destroyer from Dorada to counter, and then he flips off the ropes into Mortos's destination hellhole, but he wastes time and doesn't go for the cover immediately, so Dorada kicks out. There's a counter into a crucifix bomb by Dorada, and then Dorada slips off the top rope, goes back up, and he springs for a destroyer. Most people would have given up on this. This guy was determined to hit this destroyer, and they rolled their way through it, and this was an A for effort that they tried to pull this one off. And then goes for the Avalanche Hurricane Rana. It was more of a head scissors off the top by Dorada. Only a one count, and then hits the backbreaker and a shooting star press as Dorada wins in 10 minutes and 5 seconds. I thought this was spectacular, and it really set up like Dorada to... At least you're going to have this incredible three-way on Saturday, even if might be a neon sign on Máscara Dorada as his role in this match. But, I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun before it ends.
I don't think it's 100% that he'll be the one to take the fall.
I think it is.
I guess of the two...
Okada's really retaining this belt. Would you not assume that?
Yes, yes. And I guess Takeshita getting pinned, I can't necessarily see. Although with callous interference, I also don't rule it out either, actually. So I don't think it's 100%. But just this match. I mean, this is the first actual singles match between these two, at least as far as I can research. And I'm sure for like longtime Lucha fans, this is like something of a dream match. And it's one of those where like... It's Tony that's able to put this one together for the first time in his American promotion. And, you know, a match on such a big stage, I'm sure these performers are very grateful. I thought it completely delivered. You know, you have the best base in pro wrestling taking on arguably the best high flyer in pro wrestling. And I thought they delivered something really amazing. Not everything it was able to hit, but also most people aren't taking this sort of risk. So I think you can excuse some uncleanliness in execution. I thought Dorada really, like, he gives you that same feeling that somebody might have when, you know, the first time they're watching somebody like a Rey Mysterio or like a Mystico or like a Sasuke or like a Ricochet, you know, like just he's in a group of like elite level high flyers. And
Catered the whole match around him. It was like, I'm sure many people thought Mortos was winning this. And instead it was like the whole match was built around Dorada getting over and just doing every spectacular spot he could. And you had a great crowd that was like, this accomplished its goal of what this needed to be. And I think, you know, in a tremendous way, because Dorada came out of this like red hot going into this three way.
Yeah, I think it's a little surprising, but because like Beast Mortos is the homegrown, at this point, the homegrown guy, the guy that, you know, has received a lot more airtime, he's, you know, than Dorada. But like Dorada is able to just, I think, feel special just from his in-ring performances. And I think in what little we've seen of him on AEW television is probably done enough to make himself known. And that's especially going to be the case coming off of this three-way where against Takeshita and Okada, I mean, stylistically, Dorada has a chance to just really, really stand out and to really, really like catapult himself to even greater star power. So I really like the match, you know, despite it feeling like a bit of a cop-out from like preventing us from actually just getting Okada versus Takeshita. I'm actually looking forward to this plenty, if not even maybe a little bit more than I would just a singles match between those two.
Okada comes out with Callis, which was interesting because Takeshita comes out by himself. So it's Callis aligned with Okada here. And he just stands in front of Okada. Callis plays Peacemaker. And then out of nowhere, Dorada comes with a springboard high cross onto Okada and just points at Takeshita. Very simple. And again, I think this is one of the more anticipated matches for Saturday.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Timeless Tony Storm's spotlight, which is exactly as it's described, comes out, speaks in the spotlight. The tramp is still the champ, but for how much longer, she asks. I do not know. She's lived every day as if it's her last since regaining this belt in February. AEW is where the best wrestle, and if you aren't willing to put your life on the line, you ain't shit. And she will risk it all for three women that are all worthy. And if this is the end of my reign, it's been the honor of my life. But you will have to burn my body to the ground, pack my ashes into a pipe, and take a giant puff, because no one will get you as high as I can. Quite the metaphor. Jamie Hayter then appears in the spotlight to remind her that I don't forget, you chose to put me in this match, and Hayter hits hard. Statlander joins them. She has not wrestled for this belt in 4 years, and neither of them have the ovaries, and you can't stop Stat. So Storm instructs them to trim your bushes, bitches. And then finally out comes Tekla, who makes her way to the ring as she is Storm is held back from her for Tekla's match with Queen Aminata.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting hearing Storm like almost preemptively cut like a goodbye promo to her title reign. And it does at least make me consider whether or not this match could end with her losing the championship, as unrealistic as it might seem on the surface. But it would be the type of shock title change that I feel would make people satisfied that they purchased the show. And I can maybe hard for me to see like shock title change for some of these other matches. Trying to think like ladder match, I suppose, you know, you could get a title change there, but like, could Tony book a title change in this four-way and have Tony Storm lose it? But then you think about the field, and honestly, like, at least coming off of this promo, I wasn't really impressed with either Statlander or Hayter. I thought, like, Hayter, since coming back, I think she's still yet to find, like, an appeal that can rival, let's say, like, a Tony Storm's as a babyface champion. I thought the promo was kind of weak here. Statlander's got something going on with the Death Riders and Willow. So to me, it leaves Tekla as like, if there's any option, maybe the only other option. And to me, she's still very untested as this sort of like full package wrestler that might be able to lead a promotion. But I don't know. What do you think? Can you see a title change in this match?
I think it's possible, but I think Tekla is certainly like the big challenger for Tony Storm. I think they made it very clear on this show, and I could certainly see them coming out of this four-way where that's where you go for next month's pay-per-view, for instance. So I mean, like, you could always flip the title. I don't think you need to just keep a title on someone just for the sake of doing it, and if chasing is something you want to do, that's certainly something you could do and get Tekla. Tekla to me feels like the direction, regardless of how this match ends on Saturday. So the no-holds-barred match, this was just a brutal weapons match where these two just apparently just agreed, let's just beat the hell out of each other with every object imaginable. By the end of this, Tekla had like this welt across her chest that looked like when Bianca Belair would use her braid on Liv Morgan. She uses the kendo stick, and at one point, Tekla just launched the kendo stick. And you couldn't see it off camera, but it was a giant pop because Excalibur caught it. It's like, how hard did she throw this thing? And who was it going to hit if Excalibur didn't do like the Christian Slater with the puck in the, I don't know what movie that's from. But anyway, he caught the kendo stick, so no one died.
I wish we got that on camera. I imagine there might have been some social media video out there right now.
Maybe someone caught it, or they did. Yeah. Tekla whips her with a belt. Aminata hits her with a spinning cutter off the top into a trash can. And then Aminata gets speared onto an unfolded chair. And this was the kind of thud and angle that just looked like this was the most painful thing in the world, the way she came down on this chair. We got 10,000 trash can lid spots, one from the into the spider suplex by Tekla, and then goes for a spear, but is stopped as she runs into a chair. Fisherman Buster by Aminata onto a chair for a two count, and then finally, it's Tekla with a curb stomp onto the chair, winning in 10 and a half minutes. And Tekla calls out Toni Storm, who proceeds to run down, and she just beats the hell out of Tekla. Like, it is all one-sided. And then the Triangle of Madness are out. Statlander and Hayter are out. We've got Yuta with Shafir, and the Triangle of Madness are alone with Storm. Storm clears the ring. Hayter nearly comes from behind, but Storm catches her and dares Jamie to strike her, and the two get separated as well. So a lot going on in this post-match.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the match was great. You know, I think this AEW women's mid-card division has been really excellent lately, and I thought this Aminata Tekla feud has been one of its centerpieces. And I think, you know, just from that particular match that they had and the controversy that might have been stemming to from it of these two hitting a little bit too hard, I thought they took that and they managed to make both of them much bigger stars as a result. Aminata certainly like feels like, you know, a constant presence, like directly as a result of that sort of match. So I think they continue to establish like the fearlessness of this women's roster to hit each other hard and to have these very physical matches. It's to the point where like I almost worry that like having to maintain this sort of standard is just going to certainly affect, you know, their longevity, if not their short-term health as well, like having to keep up with this just such a physical pace. But it was a great match, a lot of plunder this time. To me, no silliness at all, just hard shots, big bumps.
No, so, this was very different from last week's street fight. But again, like, we just got this a week ago, and to your point, like, it just kind of becomes the norm. And I'm watching this match and like, this is just inviting injury. Like, to me, there were just so many moments in this match where you're just watching it and it's like there's no question of just why, like, you get these injuries that just rack up among this roster, because it's, you know, you have to do these types of matches. And I mean, let's be honest, like, this will not be something that you're thinking about by the time this pay-per-view's over, for instance.
Sure, but I would still say it was, like, to me, one of the standout matches of the show. And it's such, like, if you're somebody who's not in a main event program, if you're a woman in the mid card, it wasn't that long ago when, like, these shows, like, would only feature the world title program and really nothing else. So you're fighting as hard as you can just to get any sort of attention.
I get it.
To leave an impression on people's minds. And they're finally able to do that in this mid-card now. So, I mean, you know, tell this to, like, you know, Cope and Christian, right? And just, like, you know, the guys from the mediocre tag teams from the TLC era that did very much the same thing in order to earn, like, sort of their longevity in this thing. And it's just it's sort of the unfortunate thing that is demanded of people who aren't necessarily stars yet.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the Carousel of Co-Hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Wei answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com. Alicia Toot is with Top Flight outside, and they call tonight their biggest test, and they will prove the sky is no limit. And Hangman walks in, warning them about the Don Callis family. Daniel says, "Don't worry, we got each other's back." Okay, then. Killswitch and Kip Sabian against Jet Speed. They got the advantage on Bailey, and wouldn't you know it, Killswitch and Kip Sabian, they just can't get along. There's this botched clothesline by Killswitch onto Bailey, which they just blame on poor communication between Kip and Killswitch. I guess Kip was directing him how to throw a clothesline. Bailey manages the rapid fire kicks, makes the tag, and they did this super spot where Bailey tries for a Frankensteiner off the top to Killswitch, and he blocks it. So Knight leaps from the apron into a Rana, sending him onto the mat. Killswitch then gets hit with a standing shooting star, but kicks out. Nails the chokeslam to Bailey, but Kip is the one to demand the tag. So Killswitch slaps him, which does constitute a tag. And then as Kip uses the rope for leverage, Killswitch knocks his legs off and jumps off the apron, avoiding the tag, leaving Kip to take the tornado kick. And Bayley pins Kip Sabian in 12 minutes and 2 seconds of this dysfunctional tag team who all of their matches, they just don't get along. But they were in contendership to be part of this ladder match. So I can't say I feel this group is very much struggling in the absence of Nick Wayne, but Jet Speed enters the ladder match for the better.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how much of this was really the plan to begin with. You know, what got cut off because of Wayne's injury? How much of this is just them like replaying things that they were going to do with Cage, part of the group, before Killswitch got injured? Everything is a bit messy right now. But I do think like the dissent between Killswitch and Sabian was a lot better told here in a match like this than it was in the Cope and Christian match. Sabian is certainly having to take a step up, you know, with the absence of both Wayne and Cage, and I think he's doing a good job. But it doesn't feel as big, you know, because his star power is so much lower than the others. So they're so heavy handed with it already. Like, Killswitch is like actively leaving, you know, these matches and doing things like that, that it makes you wonder, why is Killswitch continually coming back? You know, like I thought the Cope and Christian match would have been enough for him to just say like, fuck this, I'm done. So, but yet like he comes back week after week. So what hold do they actually have on him?
Maybe they were drawn. They were just at random added to this match and they had the chance for the tag belts. Why they were given this opportunity, I can't really tell you, but they were.
You know, they knocked on the office.
Yes. Big Bill is with Brian Keith. He doesn't believe Eddie Kingston will show up on Saturday. He insults Canada and says, "You've been on your couch for 16 months while I'm on the run of my life. Kingston, you don't belong in the same ring as me. I will expose you as a fraud on Saturday." I mean, this has been a simple buildup, but, you know, it's, I think Big Bill, he's, you know, all he has is to cut some promos, and this should be, I think, a relatively short match. I don't think it should be a squash, but I think it should be kind of 10 minutes tops. And you get the return of Eddie Kingston after a long time that this guy's been out. I mean, not as long as Toa Leona in between singles matches, but still very long.
I think Big Bill's done a good job building this up on his own. And his future with, like, especially with Brian Keith remains a major mystery, especially like, you know, it doesn't seem like Jericho's coming back. I think you can tell, like, he's the type of guy where every time he gets an opportunity, he's really trying to, like, earn your attention. He's really trying to earn that spot on this very deep roster. So
he was someone that, like, he had a very good run in TNA by all intents and purposes. But when he got moved to AEW, you know, there were a lot of questions about, like, you could sign anyone. Is this guy, like, this guy has definitely overachieved in AEW. He's worked very hard, and I think this guy has like a fine spot in AEW, and I think he's done a very good job in whatever's, you know, been thrown his way. And that was, yeah, there was a lot of questions and doubt when he came to AEW.
Maybe it's just because, like, I'm still kind of deep in, like, NXT nostalgia, but, like, obviously you, like, you see some of the clips of him with Enzo and you just think, man, like, 10 years from now, this guy should be at this level. So it just, obviously he's been through a lot personally, but, like, you know, he's been in this for a long time and he's still at this point, even still trying to find a regular recurring spot within an AEW roster. So the talent is there. But it's such a deep roster, you know?
Listen, this guy, he's had his best work of these last few years as W. Morrissey and Big Bill. Okay.
Uh-huh.
These are some of the most generic. I won't call W. Morris.
W. Morrissey was among the worst names. Like, that, he wasn't even given. He gave that to himself.
I guess when Big Bill was thrown at him, he jumped at that chance. And it's fine. It works for him. He's big and he's Bill. Then we had Bryan Danielson being put to work doing a sit down with Darby Allin. And his first question, why did you climb Mount Everest? I would think Danielson would understand more than most why you would just drop everything to go climb a mountain in the middle of your life. Darby said he was making others happy, but not myself. There's a lot of snakes and politickers in wrestling. There's no politickers when you're climbing to the top of the world. It's like, are you sure? You imagine if someone was like plotting your demise in your climbing team. He said, I saw lots of bodies on the way up, and I was determined to hang the AEW flag on top. He then transitions to explain how John Moxley considered you, Brian, family, and look what he did to you. He compares it to his uncle drinking and driving, and he died, I survived, but he gave me his word, and I would never turn my back on family. Family like Sting, and he has asked, are you ready for this coffin match? Darby doesn't know, but he wants Danielson's word that you will not get involved in this match. I'm just thinking this pay-per-view should have been rechristened No Run-Ins. That would probably sell a few extra buys if they had just marketed it, because that's pretty much the theme of this show. We are all not going to have run-ins.
All out means all out of the ring. You're not allowed to get in.
We have Danielson can't get involved. We have the main event. We have the unified, the unified title. Would that not be under continental rules?
Yes. I would think so.
Clean finishes. That should be the rebranding purposes for these pay-per-views. So Danielson gives his word. And this is after Darby says that he holds himself responsible for Danielson's career ending at WrestleDream. To which Danielson can explain, listen, I've gotten involved physically. I basically did a match with Max Caster. I'm not as worst off as you may believe. But promises not to get involved. But Darby, you have to promise me one thing. And he whispers into Darby's ear. And I can only hope that this is a meme over the next couple of days where everyone can insert.
This still photo is excellent.
What's an MVPD? Darby agrees, and they shake on it. And of course, Excalibur, the journalist that he is, inquires to Danielson, what did you whisper into his ear? Danielson will not disclose. He's like, you work for us now, okay? You give us your goddamn scoops.
Yes. Well, it'll be up to the journalist to find out.
Maybe it's like, I want you to light John Moxley on fire.
Could be.
So I'm pretty sure that this is obvious. Danielson will be on commentary for this match.
Oh, absolutely. I could see Danielson being part of the whole show, actually.
Maybe
just put him like on for the he was thing. Just like he was for this 3-hour block, you know, ahead of Shivani, Taz, and Nigel.
Maybe we get Danielson and Nigel on the pay-per-view. Maybe that's your bonus you get on the pay-per-view for a match. That would
be really nice, yeah. So this segment went a lot differently than I expected. I mean, first of all, it was novel to see Danielson do an interview segment, of which, obviously he's excellent doing everything.
Look
right?
at the still shot.
I thought Danielson was very good here playing the interviewer role, but this became more than that because it directly involved Danielson into the storyline and into the match. So this sets up whatever secret Danielson is whispering into Darby Allin's ear, like he's, six years old. So I'm also really glad that we finally got to hear why Darby decided to climb Mount Everest. Like, you'd figure this would be something that he would have said coming back.
He was just waiting for someone to interview him.
That's right.
He wanted to explain his why.
Yeah. So we finally got that answer. So there you go.
Riho and Robin Renegade with Mercedes Moné on commentary. She refers to Riho as a little girl, and Excalibur notes she is 28. Riho,
she's only like 5 years younger than Moné.
Yeah, I mean, she's an adult. Riho looked a lot better this week than last week's tag match. She hit this sliding drop kick to Robin, and then a high cross to the floor. Robin got the heat for a brief time. This aired during the picture-in-picture. Some people might have missed this, but Robin is chopping her and licks her hand, to which Excalibur observes that he never saw Kenta Kobashi do that. And that got Danielson to reminisce about Kenta Kobashi. There's a double stomp by Riho, dragon suplex, and wins with a crucifix bomb in 4:54. Monet runs in, hits Riho with a backstabber, holds up the TBS belt. So pretty standard build for the match, but I thought this came across a lot better than last week's interaction.
Agreed. Yeah, good match for Riho. I thought Renegade was a very strong choice for a showcase opponent for her. She's much taller, and it feels like they're teasing something with Robin Renegade and Mercedes Moné. I feel like this was like a rumor, or at least something that's been discussed like long ago that they never executed. So they might just be going around back to that right now. And maybe this would represent a more consistent role for Robin Renegade. Although I don't know how much of it we should really look into the tease.
Then they showed a recap of Jerry Lynn with Max Caster and Anthony Bowens. Nothing, no follow-up, just this is what happened on Collision. And
I really don't think, like, I don't know if I should expect much follow-up from Jerry Lynn. Like, I really feel like that might have just been a one-week only thing because of the ECW connection.
Well, they showed it for you. The Death Riders cut a promo, minus Moxley, and it's Daniel Garcia challenging Shibata to a match. The Ops respond, and this will happen on the Tailgate Brawl. It's the rubber match between Shibata and Garcia following their matches at Death Before Dishonor 2 years ago, which Shibata won, and then Garcia won a rematch, a TNT title match, in January this past year. So that's been added, as has Joe and Hobbs against the Workhorsemen, J.D. Drake and Anthony Henry. And those are the three matches on the Tailgate Brawl so far.
So no 0 hour or buy-in, just this 1 hour ahead.
Tailgate Brawl, yeah, which, given that it's, like, usually they do, like, an hour 15 when it's a 0 hour, but given that it's a Tailgate Brawl, it's on TNT, so you'll have commercial breaks. Mm-hmm. Three matches is probably what you can fit in during that hour, and you want to spend some time, like, really pushing the show and everything.
And is it on Triller for people who don't get TNT?
That's a good question.
Or, like, internationally, like, where can people watch it?
I will have to check on that. I don't know. I would think so, but not 100% sure. So, yeah, we are up to 13 matches, including the three on the Tailgate Brawl. Will we hit 16 way?
I want to say yes.
Okay, why not? And the main event, Josh Alexander and Hechicero against Top Flight. Most of this match was Danielson and Callis just gushing over Hechicero. I mean, Danielson, this might be his favorite wrestler outside of Blue Panther and Yuji Nagata. One point, Callis just asks, have you ever wrestled someone like Hechicero? And Danielson responds, I wrestled Hechicero. Like, oh, okay. They had the advantage on Darius for a long time. All I could think about was watching this match that I would not be rooting for Dante Martin to enter another ladder match. Is it just me?
Oh, no. You know, I didn't even remember, but yes, I
think he's good for ladders for like this decade. I think things went badly enough the last
time. I think it would pose like a good story, you know, how, like, Dante faces his fear, or at least like tries to, you know, climb Mount Everest, essentially, like his version, you know.
Well, he hit the nosedive onto Josh, heads to Cesaro's in, then Josh did the rolling Germans, and I think here what they were trying was Dante was going to like leapfrog backward over Josh, but just came down on top of Josh, this guy who got dropped on his head with that exploder a week ago. Now this guy just falls right down on him, but recovers, hits a poison Rana after a super kick from Darius, and then Darius goes for a dive to the floor. Josh nails him with an elbow that takes Darius out of the match. He's just dead on the floor, and Dante is thrown off of the top, and Hechicero hits the guillotine for the win as they advance to the ladder match. So we have got the Young Bucks, Hechicero and Josh Alexander, Jet Speed and Brodito defending. So then the Don Callis family surrounded Daniels, Scorpio Sky runs out, Jet Speed are out, Young Bucks, Brodito, all the teams are out, and it led to a top rope Acai moonsault by Bandito. Archer would boot Daniels, and they double team him with Rocky Romero when Hangman Page runs out for the save, and we get Fletcher involved, sliding in, and Kyle jumps Hangman. Page ends up fighting off the Brainbuster off the edge of the apron, goes for a buckshot lariat right into a belt shot, and Kyle hits the brainbuster off the apron through a table, the same spot he took Kenny Omega out with, and Hangman is left laying, and no blood, but he was not able to leave on his own two feet as Kyle held up both belts as your closing shot.
Maybe we had some internal blood there. We don't know.
Internal bleeding, yes.
Perhaps,
maybe.
Yeah. First, I thought the match was good, even though it was certainly, to me, even more of a foregone conclusion. Crowd certainly sounded a bit tired by this point.
I thought like the last half hour or so of this show, I think they kind of hit a wall, which I think is natural in some of these. I did not think Top Flight looked as great in this match. I thought just watching this, it just felt like they were more off, and it was Alexander and Hechicero that, to me, were kind of keeping things together here. And I do think it's a more interesting match with Alexander and Hechicero in this match on Saturday.
Yeah. I really, really strong closing angle here with Paige and Fletcher. But man, like, I continue to think it's so crazy the amount of risk Hangman Page is willing to take.
He won't break
on a regular basis, but especially before a pay-per-view title match, what we're presuming to be the main event. It's just like, man, this company cannot afford to lose him, and here this guy is taking these like crazy moves, including this brainbuster off the apron through a table. It's a major bump to take on the go home show before the match, and one that certainly adds some intrigue, but does it? I don't think it's selling one more pay-per-view, honestly, but it's a hell of a closing angle and a great closing shot here of Fletcher holding both championships.
I thought they did a really great job with Kyle Fletcher on this show. Like, you, whatever you want to think about this, like putting him in this main event slot, I don't think they could have done a more of a job than they did here of really trying to make him feel like a threat to this title. I was very happy the way they bookended the show. He came off very, very strong in this role to me. And the show, I thought like the 3 hours, you kind of felt it by the end. But I would say that for like 3/4 of this show, you had an excellent crowd. And there was a lot of good matches on this show, like from the Young Bucks with Juice and Austin, Dorada and Beast Mortos. I got into Lashley and Toa. Moxley and Roderick was great. Tekla and Queen Aminata, like, it was like, you know, a violent hardcore match. And yeah, I think it was mainly like the weaker part was just maybe the kind of final half hour, 45 minutes. But you did end with a strong angle with Fletcher and Hangman. So I did think overall it was a pretty good show. And I thought like an effective go home show, not the best AEW has produced. But I thought for what they've got for Saturday, they hit it. They hit the key stuff pretty well.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought this episode added to the card. I mean, they added matches to the card, you know, for some of the matches we didn't even know who the participants were. So now that we know what the ladder match is, I certainly think it feels like it's one of the highlights of the show, having Brodito and the Bucks and Jet Speed and Hechicero and Josh Alexander in that ladder match. That suddenly makes it a definitely must-see match. Dorada had a great showing here, so like his inclusion in Takeshita versus Okada feels like a big match. And then, you know, I thought like you had some good promo here from both MJF, also
I'm just looking up and down. Like, they did something for every one of these 13 matches.
Let's go through just the card. We don't have to do a preview, but just here, I'll go through it. According to the latest, actually, on Wikipedia here. So on the prelims, we've got Harley Cameron, Mina Shirakawa, Queen Aminata, and Willow Nightingale taking on Megan Bain, Penelope Ford in the Triangle of Madnesses, Julia Hart and Sky Blue in a Tornado Tailgate Brawl, Daniel Garcia versus Katsuyori Shibata, the Ops versus the Workhorsemen. That is the Tailgate Brawl portion of the show. And then the pay-per-view proper will have Cope and Cage, or Cage and Cope, taking on FTR. We've got the Hurt Syndicate taking on Ricochet and the Gates of Agony. Mercedes Moné versus Riho. Darby Allin versus Jon Moxley. Mark Briscoe versus MJF. Tony Storm versus Jamie Hayter versus Chris Statlander versus Tekla. Hangman Page versus Kyle Fletcher. Okada versus Takeshita versus Mascara Dorada. The return of Eddie Kingston against Big Bill. And then we got that ladder match with Brodito, the Bucks, Jet Speed, and the Don Callis family.
Dude, this show is going to be long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As they always are. I mean, it's definitely okay. So what do we know about WrestlePalooza? They've got their preview at 7 o'clock, right?
They're doing a pre-show. They're doing the WWE pre-show at 3, Which is nothing unless they announce that they are doing matches. Like, it would not stun me if they opted to do a match or two in those 2 hours and change things up for this reason.
You said 3 o'clock?
3 o'clock. 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock is the pre-show. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
But they're doing stuff earlier in the day, I believe, on the ESPN app.
Okay.
They're doing a ton of, like, programming.
When does the actual PLE start?
7 o'clock.
Okay.
Yes.
This will definitely bleed into that.
Yes, 100%. This
show will be more than 4 hours.
Yeah, there's no way they are getting these 10 matches in less than 4 hours. Not a prayer. This will absolutely... Yeah. I think it'll go like an hour at least into WrestlePalooza.
And I think it'll be by Tony's design if we've seen, you know, what All Out was.
When you just look at this, like, what could you see here being under 10 minutes? Like, the only... Like, even Big Bill and Eddie Kingston, that could end up going over 10 minutes. Like, everything else here, I think, is all of it's going to get time. Yeah, and I don't think they're going to be incentivized to go short. So, yeah, I think this is definitely going to be very much like All in Texas against Saturday night's main event, I feel. Mm. All right, we're going to say goodbye on the YouTube channel, but we are back on Sunday. Pay attention on the site. We will alert everybody when we will be going live on Sunday with a double review of both Saturday night programs. You can keep on board here as we go to the Post Wrestling Cafe for your feedback and questions over at forum.postwrestling.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.